This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon. Welcome to Health and Living with me, T. Xiao Yik. In the studio with me today for her monthly show, she's just rushed right in at the nick of time, Dr. Rajini Sarvanandan, consultant developmental pediatrician. It's okay, Dr. Rajini. I know you'll always make it. We're talking about an interesting topic today, I think. When I grow up, when a child grows up, that idea of what children want to be when they grow up. So a survey earlier this year by Lego, the toy company, and Harris Poll found that almost one third of children that they surveyed in the US, UK and China want to be YouTube influencers when they grow up. And they found that that was three times more than the kids who want to be astronauts. So how do children come to these decisions? How do they develop their future career interests, and what role do parents play in guiding these career decisions? And seeing as it's the end of the school year and many parents are probably having to have that talk with their older children now, perhaps those who are going on to tertiary education, we're speaking today to Dr. Rajini about, you know, how parents can have this conversation, this kind of discussion with their children. When should it begin? How do we talk to them about it? So if you have any questions, call us 03-7733-2900, WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. How are you today, Dr. Rajini?
I'm fine, thank you, shall we?
Dr. Rajini, when did you know that you wanted to become a doctor?
Oh my goodness. You know, I've always enjoyed working with children. And when I went to school, I was part of something called the Interact Club. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we did a lot of work with sort of children who came from broken homes. They were mm-hmm. It wasn't exactly an orphanage, but it was a home where children stayed in the week or whenever they needed to. And some kids came to this center after school. Mm-hmm. And, you know, our club would just go in and play games with them. And, you know, twice a month, that was our sort of community service.
Right, yes.
And I've always enjoyed working with children. And to be honest, Shawik, I actually wanted to be a social worker.
Oh, wow.
At one point, because I think I was inspired by the social worker who was at the center, who basically was sort of coordinating a lot of things. And, you know, in those days, there weren't really psychologists. Mm-hmm. And the social worker was sort of doubling up, I think.
Playing that role.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and talking to her, and I was very inspired. But I come from a family of doctors. Mm. My parents are doctors. And, you know, who dreams of being a social worker, right? And so my parents sort of pushed me towards applying for medicine. And you know, I never really thought about it, but I sort of knew when I went into medicine that I was going to be a pediatrician, and there wasn't anything else I was going to be. So I, you know, in those days, you sort of toe the line, don't really argue mm-hmm. sometimes. But, you know, I think
you do what your parents want for you.
In a sense. But I think my parents did it in such a way that they made us go and do some work experience. Mm. Part of me never really thought I could be a doctor because I wasn't very smart, shall we? I was an average student. And at that point, you know, people sort of said you needed to be taught creme de la creme mm-hmm. to do medicine. Mm. And, you know, that's probably why my parents sent me overseas. I wasn't creme de la creme to get into anything locally.
I mean, it's the competitiveness
yes.
locally.
Yeah. Yeah. So in a sense, I think for a lot of kids these days, parents, Asian parents still very much drive yeah. what their children want to do yeah. To some extent. But you know, it was interesting reading the article you forwarded to me about how there was a difference between China and
the
children
US.
In the US.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so I think parents still play a big role in not forcing their children, but giving them opportunities to sort of think about it. But Yeah,
but you know, then there's that generational gap where perhaps parents, those who are parents now with growing up children, may still have some vestiges of that. You know, what is a conventional successful career, but the children are a completely different generation, and what they are exposed to is so different. How is that still valid? Is that role of the parent in guiding? Mm-hmm. You know, does it change the way we guide?
To some extent, yes and no. I think in Asia, we're sort of grappling with that to some extent, right? Part of us, some of us as parents, we want to give children choice, but then at the same time, we worry when they come up with ideas that you sort of think, oh no, they're not going to have a regular job with a regular income. But I think, you know, parents still play a big role, not just in, not so much in helping children make that decision, but I think more importantly, we really influence whether our children are prepared for that real world out there. So I think there's two aspects of it. And I think as parents, yes, we still probably, in a way, guide our kids to some extent in the sense that it depends what opportunities we give our children. So if I think back to when I was a child and how I came to my decision, and, you know, I wasn't sort of sent kicking and screaming to medical school, but you know, somehow or other, my parents made me see that, oh, you can still work with kids by becoming a pediatrician. There's still people there who, you know, pediatricians out there who don't just treat kids. They do a little bit more than that. And I think by allowing me the opportunity to take part in all these extracurricular activities, that's what opened my eyes to things. So my parents gave me the educational opportunities that also influenced how I came to what I do now.
Does that idea come to children naturally, what they want to be when they grow up?
If you speak to children between the ages, you know, from sort of school age children, primary school age children, you know, it's so nice when you speak to year one kids because they're so naive in in some of their thoughts and ideas, right? And then as they grow up and they start to experience life and they...
And all its cynicism.
Exactly. And then, you know, the exposure from peers. And you talk to teenagers, what they wanted to become in the first 5 years of primary school and what they want to become as they're nearing sort of their SPM or O-levels or A-levels or et cetera, may be completely different.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think we can't take it, we can't sort of assume what children want to be in the first 5 years of primary school life as being that's it. You know, I still remember when I was asked to write down when I was in year one and year two, what do you want to be when you grow up? And you know, the three things I wrote, doctor, teacher, air hostess. Because going on a plane in those days was so
so glamorous.
And you see these beautiful women walking down the aisle, smiling, looking immaculate, you know. I mean, that was year one and two. And then fast forward 10 years, it changes. And essentially, that's what I see in a lot of children, really.
And, you know, you mentioned the role of parents, not so much to put the idea of what the children should do, but preparing them. You mentioned educational opportunities, but what about equipping children with the values that come with work? So it's not being able, the concept of work, rather, is tied to responsibility, for instance, discipline, things like that. How do parents inculcate that?
And I think that's very important. You know, one of the things we talk about in terms of preparing children, I mean, as you know, I work a lot with families with children with disabilities. And one of the things we talk about is just getting their basic adaptive skills strengthened. And what we mean by adaptive skills is, you know, how they are able to use the skills that they have to be able to survive in their family, within their school or community, in the larger world, and also in terms of their skills such as being able to manage themselves, so mm-hmm. self-help skills, the mm-hmm. basic feeding, dressing, taking care of the hygiene, taking care of their belongings, being organized so they can, pack their own school bags mm-hmm. or if you're going on a trip away, going to stay with grandma, can they work out what they need to pack and when it's time to go home, how they manage themselves, how they relate to people around them, how they are able to navigate the dangers in the community, you know, crossing the road, etc. And it all starts from a very young age. The other thing is responsibility and being kind and empathetic. And you know, we tend to worry so much about the academics that we forget about these other softer skills. Mm-hmm. And you know, you can look at it as IQ and EQ in a sense. Mm-hmm. But we know that in the real world out there, more and more people are saying it's all those EQ skills, your communication, mm-hmm. empathy, being able to work with other people, being able to self-regulate your emotions. Mm-hmm. Once you've got your basic self-help skills there, it's these skills that matter more than your paper qualification or your academic degree or...
Yeah. And you mentioned, children with special needs or non-typically developing children. So when we come back from the break, I'd like to talk about whether the conversation about work and career is any different. Mm-hmm. How do parents manage that? How mm-hmm. do parents start planning that with their children or for their children, whatever the case may be? In the studio with me today, consultant developmental pediatrician Dr. Rajini Sarvanandan, talking about how parents can have the conversation with their children about future work and career. If you have any questions, call us 03-7733-2900, WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899, or tweet us at BFM Radio. Good afternoon. Welcome back to Health and Living with me, T. Xiao Ik, and consultant developmental pediatrician, Dr. Rajini Sarvanandan. We're talking about what children want to do when they grow up. And the promo that you just heard, the Morning Run show, the Morning Run presenter talked about creativity and resourcefulness in children. So I suppose those are necessary traits or skills as well that children need. Yeah. In order to survive when they're working, right?
You know, I like to relate the story. When my youngest was going to enter Standard 1, the school had a streaming exam before they entered Year 1. This is a number of years ago. It's a Sekolah Kebangsaan.
It's one of those high-performing schools?
Yes, right. Okay. So my youngest had been familiar with the school because her older two sisters were there and we always took her in for sports day, etc. And she looked very much like my eldest. So during the exam, the parents were shuttled off to the hall and the kids did the exam. And during the exam, my daughter's Bahasa Malaysia was not very strong. But during the exam, she actually asked the teacher for help with some of the questions. Mm. And the teacher gave her a lot of the answers. So when she came out of the exam and I said, "How was the exam?" And she goes, "Oh, it's easy." And then we found out she made it to the top class, which I was really shocked about. And I realized which teacher it was who had given her the answers. And I went up to the teacher on the first day of school and I said, "Puan Noseha, you gave my daughter all the answers. She cheated in the exam." Mm. And her reply to me, stuck with me. And she said, "I disagree that we stream kids, firstly, at such a young age. Mm. And if a child has the ability to ask me questions mm-hmm. and want to know answers to the questions, I'm here as a teacher. I'm going to give her those answers because she's learning. Mm. And I don't care what results she gets in. To me, a child who asks questions, it's a good sign. Yeah. And, I thought about it and I thought, okay, I won't call it cheating.
That's right. So it wasn't about the answer, the results itself.
No.
It was the process of your child knowing how to...
Get help.
Yeah, knowing
when
how to
she
solve
was in
the
trouble.
She faced an obstacle and she was thinking of ways around it.
And I was really pleased at that teacher. teacher. I mean, she was a very experienced teacher. She, you know, was a couple of years from retirement. And I guess she'd seen what the education system was doing, and she probably disagreed with it. She thought, okay, here's my chance with the kids. But apparently it wasn't just my daughter who did. Mm-hmm. Now, some people would say, oh, that's wrong. You're teaching your child to, the child to cheat. But, you know, one of the things you see in the working world is you want people to ask questions when they're in trouble.
Mm-hmm.
You don't want them to just go ahead and do something, especially in the medical line, to do something and be fearful of asking, and then you make a mistake and it's somebody else's life on the line.
Mm.
Yeah.
Mm.
And it doesn't necessarily, you know, it doesn't have to be someone else's life. I mean, if you take any job, I'm sure as a senior in your work, you would want someone junior to ask you questions rather than make a huge mistake that will affect the whole
Or just not get anywhere, just be stuck there.
Yeah.
But how do you nurture that? How did you nurture that trait in your child?
Okay, so this comes down to, you know, how you open communication lines with your children. And, you know, I think it's important that we develop good communication skills with children from a young age. You talk about your day, so children talk about their day. And, you know, through that, you can discuss what went wrong, what went right, and, you know, put them right if something went wrong. You know, so I would say communication is the basis for a lot of things.
Mm-hmm.
And you do find that even in workplace, young adults who have communication difficulties are often the ones who struggle in the workforce to some extent, regardless of the job you do. Because, you know, you may not be in a people...
like a service-oriented
job, but you still need to communicate with people in your uplines.
Mm.
And this is often where the difficulty lies when you have children with disabilities, especially communication disabilities.
Yes, something that I do want to get to, how different or nuanced would the conversation be when parents are looking at, guiding non-typically developing children when it comes to thinking about what they want to do in the future.
Mm.
Consultant developmental pediatrician Dr. Rajini Sarvanandan is in the studio. If you have any questions, call us 03-7733-2900 or WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899. We have a question on WhatsApp now from Umi. How do you shape your children's career? And I would add to that, I suppose, when and how do you start talking to children about
what they want to do? I think there's no harm talking about it at every stage of their life. And you sometimes have that conversation to sort of know how your child is thinking, you know. If I use my own personal experience with my own children, you know, when my eldest was younger, she wanted to be a teacher. And then it changed when she, you know, got to secondary school and she went off to get braces done. And it was done in University of Malaya, and she was sort of, the whole process was done by a trainee. So not a specialist, but a trainee. And I think that trainee somehow influenced, and now she's on a career path to do dentistry.
Wow.
And, you know, along the way, at some point, she also expressed how she never wanted to be a doctor because I guess she grew up when my husband and I were working long hours. We didn't have time. So a lot of things shape different children's career.
Mm-hmm.
You know, different children. I know of a family friend whose daughter wanted to be, you know, a dancer all along, a performer, and suddenly she changed her mind and she decided, oh, I want to do engineering.
Wow.
And quite, you know, pivot. What changed her mind was when she started to do more sciences in school, just leading up to her SPM. And then she decided, oh, I think I want to do it. And I think what you expose your children to, again, matters. I think it's okay to talk about it. And when they're younger, don't take it so seriously if they tell you they want to be a YouTuber.
Yeah.
That sort of tells me what influences their lives.
Mm.
You know, a lot of kids nowadays, I know, watch people on YouTube in a variety of ways, like how they play with toys.
Yes.
Yep. How they, you know, come up with memes and songs, mm-hmm. etc. Mm-hmm. So things like that influence them at different times of their life.
I mean, I understand that. And I guess it's a point at which parents want to stop and think, okay, so this means my child is exposed to this much YouTube, perhaps.
Yes.
And they think that this is viable. But also, what about then perhaps if kids are getting the idea that it's a quick path to getting rich?
And again, it's about balance of what you expose your kids to. So, you know, if you talk about if you look at advice on what you should expose your teens to, people talk a lot about having exposure to community services, not just within the school, within the family, but actually exposing kids to things they may not see, poverty, cruelty to animals, to children, getting them out in the real world for them to see the real world and understanding that, you know, it's not just about material gains and academic qualifications and that there's more to life and what influences there are. There, you know, it is also the topic of conversation at your dinner table.
Mm-hmm.
If all you talk about is, if you want to get that next generation iPhone, you've got to study really hard.
Mm.
Or, you know, if you constantly are rewarding your children with material things, then they will think, oh, if I want that, then I need to get money quick.
Mm.
So, you know, I think a lot of it is down to exposure, parenting.
Mm.
And we know that, you know, parenting plays a role in terms of not just what you expose your child to, but how you actually bring up your child, whether you're very authoritarian or very, you know, permissive in what you allow your children to do.
Mm. And on the note of parenting, Sharon is on the line. Question, Sharon.
Hi. So I just want to find out that, you know, how do you teach young kids to have empathy? I understand this morning you spoke a bit about EQ.
Mm-hmm.
And nowadays my kids are very privileged. So, you know, they get almost anything they want. And then I realize that now when I ask them, you know, things to be more empathetical, they don't get the message. And I struggle on how to teach them and get that value system into them. So just hoping for some advice.
How old are your children, Sharon, just out of curiosity?
So my kids are 6 and 4.
Okay, they're still young. You know, I would start within, for example, your own sort of community situations. If you take them to the playground and, you know, you come across other children who may be shy or rough, and that you point out kids who are different to them and say, you know, maybe why don't we go and talk to that child and see if they want to play? Or if there's a child who's rough and grab something from them, instead of saying you're a naughty boy, you know, going up and saying, oh, you know, can I have my ball back? And would you want to play with my ball? Sort of, you know, teaching them how to relate to children who may be different in terms of different ways. And I always believe that, you know, you need, yes, at 6 and 4, you may want to take them out to orphanages or, you know, but these one-off situations are not going to make any impact on them. But using within your own context in school, finding out if there are kids who are struggling and getting them to, encouraging them to help these other children, that helps. You will always find children who are less privileged than them, less able than them. And it's about highlighting that and telling them, look, and you know, at the end of the day, it's about us modeling that as well. You know, when we stop to help somebody to cross the road, or even just go visit our neighbors and help them out when they need help, these are ways that you can model to your children as well.
So let's look at careers and work in non-typically developing children. I mean, I suppose, you know, it may seem disingenuous for you, but really, why is it important to talk about that for children with special needs? What are we trying to achieve there?
You know, for a lot of families who have children with special needs, when they first find out, especially when their children are in the early toddler or preschool years, you know, it's a big hit. You sort of expect this to be having a normal child that, you know, somehow or other continues to develop without you having to put in that much effort. Although I think with any child, you have to put in that effort.
Yes.
But, you know, to suddenly know that, oh, you can't take that normal path that everybody else takes. And for a lot of families, the initial thing is, okay, I'm going to get help and I want my child to be normal. And the first goal that they think about is, I need my child ready for school at 7. And it's about telling them it's not about that reaching that goal at 7. Or even if you don't reach that goal to get your child ready for a mainstream school or even a learning center, it's not the end of the world, because we're talking about a long journey. And I think it's important for parents to remember it's not about getting them to be ready for school, but it's about getting them ready for life. You're only in school for so many years, and after school you have to get on with life. And, you know, we need to be focusing about getting that child independent themselves first, and then, you know, being independent within that smaller community of school or center or wherever that child's going to be learning, or within a homeschool environment, if parents are going to homeschool their kids at home, and then society at large. And I think for many parents, they're scared to think about that.
Yeah.
You know, and I always like to talk to parents. Of course, I don't address this within that first few sessions that I see them, but what do you want from your children in the long term? I mean, all of us want our children to be happy. We want them to be independent when they're older.
Yeah.
And ideally, we want them to have a good, secure job so that, you know, they don't have to worry about when food is coming on their table. And when you have a child with a disability, these are constant worries.
Yes.
Okay. But there are things you can do. And, you know, the research shows that with children with disabilities, it does not matter what their academic qualification is to a large extent, but have they got those basic adaptive skills in place? And are they being exposed to society and being challenged within a bigger community and society to see whether or not they can survive? And so when we talk about careers, or, you know, we need to move away from thinking of school, university, job.
Yeah.
And I think that is becoming true for a lot of, I mean, we have so many jobless graduates, right?
Yeah.
So I think we need to be thinking more in terms of, okay, get my child ready, independent. If I can access a school, even if it's a special school, let me allow him to be able to start to spread his wings within a smaller community. And then I need to start thinking about what skills he needs to be able to be function in that community. And in the longer term, what else do I need to be doing to get him ready for a vocation or something that he can be independent with?
Yeah, but on that note, I mean, yeah, the conventional, the typical path of school, university career doesn't fit.
Yes.
But there's this, the other side of it is the cliche of working as in a fast food restaurant. I don't mean to be cruel, but you know, there's that stereotype that they can't do anything else but the most menial of jobs. How do parents manage that?
I think, as a society, we need to get away from thinking about these jobs as menial. They're necessary for society, right? And you know, isn't it better for your child to be in a job like that than to be stuck at home and you need to care for him? You know, all of us need human contact, and you know, just going out for a few hours in a day makes a big difference to our lives. And why not a child with a disability? You know, some of us have done these jobs as we were students or et cetera.
Yeah.
And you know, in a sense, I would always say anybody who's going down the line of a professional career should learn to do some menial jobs to know what it's like.
Mm.
So for children with disabilities, I don't think we should be saying, oh, it's a menial job, but we should be saying it's a job.
Mm.
And they are independent and they're contributing to society.
Mm.
As opposed to society having to look after them.
Mm, okay. We are talking to consultant developmental pediatrician Dr. Rajini Saravanandan about how parents need to, you know, how parents can guide their children in terms of thinking about what they want to do when they grow up, their future career and work, and sort of like how to, you know, mold or help them shape that pathway. If you have any questions, call us 03-7733-2900, WhatsApp us at 018-7899-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. When we come back, just very quickly, a little bit more about, you know, how then parents of non-typically developing children can, what are the resources for them to help their children build those vocational skills? And also for parents of typically developing children, you know, how do we start navigating this pathway in terms of education? What can our education system offer? What's the role of school teachers and counselors as well? So we'll be right back after this quick break. BFM 89.9. Good afternoon. Welcome back to Health and Living. Dr. Rajini Saravanandan, consultant developmental pediatrician, in the studio with me today. We are talking about what children want to do when they grow up, or rather, as sort of like the role that parents can play in helping children come to those decisions, in helping them achieve those ambitions. We have a call from Vani. Good afternoon, Vani. You have a question.
Hi, Shari. Hi, Doctor.
Hi.
Hi, I have, let me go straight to the question. I have three kids, 11, 8 and 5.
Uh-huh.
So my first and third children are boys and my middle child is a daughter.
Uh-huh.
My question is regarding my 8-year-old girl who, in certain episodes, she has a tendency to be nasty, which doesn't always appear, but it comes in spells. And we've tried over the course of many years to address it in many ways, and which also includes talking to her at night and explaining what she did wrong and what she could do better, and constantly reinforcing good behavior and telling her when she does something good, telling her that she's done a good job. But I'm wondering if it's innate.
Okay, this is a tough one.
Could you give an example,
yeah,
if you don't mind, Vani?
Okay.
What do you mean by the episodes, and what do you mean by nasty?
So there's some moments that she will, her youngest brother, she's very fond of her brothers. So sometimes she will cuddle the youngest brother and baby him and bathe him and dress him up and really, really pamper him rotten. And there are moments where she will lash out and sometimes pinch him, and she doesn't mind hurting him, like shoving him really hard, and then, you know, it's very erratic.
So quite often it's difficult because what you're giving is just general sort of situations.
Mm-hmm.
Often you find children react negatively when you know, they are unhappy, or you know, they feel low about themselves, and sometimes it's good to do what we call a ABC chart, where we look at what happened before that particular, if you want to call it, nasty behavior,
mm-hmm,
and what are the consequences. And sometimes, you know, I don't know whether this is, I'd never believe that things are innate. In a sense, I always want to be sure that we've tried our best in working through what really triggers the behaviors. And it may be that you need to seek more professional help to work through this.
Yeah. Okay, understand. But how do I reach out? I'm not certain where I'm supposed to go, or
I would
to get a...
Yeah, I would probably start with a child psychologist or clinical psychologist, I would say, right, to sort of work through how, you know, you work through these behaviors and see what can be done or whether there are any particular triggers that maybe, you know, having an outsider looking in and mm-hmm. analyzing behavior sometimes can help with that.
Understand.
Yeah. Okay, thank you very much for your question.
Thank you very
Fanny.
Much. Thank All you very right. much.
So, coming back then to the topic we are discussing today, which is about work and careers and children. And before the break, we were talking about children with disabilities or special needs. And if vocational skills are the most practical for these children, here in Malaysia, within the system that we have, how do parents go about equipping their kids with those skills?
I think one thing to remember is, you know, just as we said, typically developing children may not really know what they want to do until much later on in their school years or even after school. Mm-hmm. You know, some people even change career paths after they've been through their degree and started a job.
Midway through their career.
Exactly. So we have to remember that. And with typically developing children, it's not that you identify a skill at 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 and that is what they're going to do for the rest of their life. I think it's, again, about exposure. So today, in fact, it was a really good example of a boy that I've been seeing since he was 3 years old, and he has autism. And his parents actually come from a lower middle class family. And, you know, they've done really well. I mean, the initial years, it was a struggle, and the parents could not manage this boy mm-hmm. and his behaviors. But in the last, he's now 11 and a half, and in the last 2 or 3 years, mum gave up her job and has really worked well with him. And, you know, this 11 and a half year old boy can mop and sweep the house. Mm-hmm. When the clouds are darkening, he will automatically go close all the windows without being asked, bring in clothes without being asked. His mum has taught him a little bit of cooking, and he likes cooking, likes going to the market. His fascination in the market is seeing the live chickens. Okay. But then he'll go and help dad with groceries and marketing. He goes to a class integrated class within a Sekolah Kebangsaan, and his teachers have been really good at exposing. Their school is good at exposing children to different things, and his teachers have found that he likes gardening. So they live in a flat, so they don't have that opportunity. The teachers have also found that he's very good at fixing computers and phones when they don't work, right. You know, checking wires and all that. And that dad also found that out recently, that he somehow managed to fix an old PC that they had at home. So there's so many different things that this boy could eventually be exposed to. And I think his parents have done really well in terms of teaching him how to cross the road, you know. Yes, his verbal communication skills may not be good, but he can take instructions well and all that. And his teachers have actually told his parents and told them, look, there are 3 secondary schools nearby with integrated classes. Mm-hmm. These 2 are probably more suitable for him because they have the skill sets in the school that are suitable for him. So this is where you want dialogue with teachers, parents understanding their children to basically find out what it is that they can expose their children to.
Okay. And, you know, in terms for typically developing children, what parents tend to do today, perhaps it's not a very recent phenomenon either, pack on a lot of extracurricular activities in the hopes that it exposes kids to just different types of skills, music, classes, sports, and just make them as well-rounded as possible. Mm-hmm. But in the midst of all that, how do parents then sort of identify or isolate what are children's skills or strengths that then could be built upon for, you know, a future career?
Yeah.
Or is it too early to be thinking about that?
You know, it's a hard one. And I think it's tough because children change in terms of what they can or in terms of their skill sets. So, you know, what they're like in the primary school years in terms of their interests and their skills may not be what they're like when they're in secondary mm-hmm. school. And I think as children get older, I mean, we tend to want our children to do a lot of things. And I think, you know, we talked about helicopter parenting. This mm-hmm. is where we've got to sort of land that helicopter and step back a bit and let that child decide, you know what, I want to give up my piano instead of doing it all the way to grade 8. You know, there's no point pushing a child if they don't want to do it. That's one. Number two is also making sure that your child is not the child who starts something and gives up on it. So we as parents can sort of set limits like, okay, you want to try something new? You're going to have to do it for the next 6 months at least or 1 year before you say, no, I don't like it. Mm-hmm. So we can do things like that to sort of nurture our children. Mm-hmm. At the end of the day, you're going to have to just hope that they find their path in terms of deciding what they want to do. I think if you think your child likes something and your child tells you, hey, mom, I think I want to work in, you know, IT, maybe guide your child in finding work opportunities or apprenticeships that allows your older child to do that.
And when it comes to the formal education years, and that's such a big part of children's growing up years that is supposed to prepare them for adulthood. Mm-hmm. So what is the role of education, and specifically not just the curriculum, but, you know, school teachers, and you've mentioned how school teachers play such an important role. School counselors as well, you know, how can they play that role in helping children make these decisions?
And you know, I think they don't realize that they have such a big role, especially secondary school teachers, in sort of helping guide their kids, in a sense. I would say schools that provide opportunities for children to try different roles outside the curriculum will get to know their students better. Mm-hmm. And it also allows children to explore interests. I mean, not many families have the means in terms of monetary means as well as time to be able to shuttle their children between different classes, mm-hmm. or maybe, you know, something like gardening. Most families live in apartments or homes that don't have the space for them to do gardening. And, you know, if schools expose their children to it, and this is where children start to maybe cultivate an interest in it. Mm-hmm. I'm not saying they're going to be gardeners, but, you know, they might find an interest in something like botany or, you know, science per se, or, you know, different aspects of it, you know, how to harvest water, recycle water, etc. So I think school is a great place where we should be encouraging our schools to have these activities. Mm. You know, I'm lucky enough to be able to afford a private school for my children. And I always think that, you know, that what that school offers my kids, it's not about the teachers and the curriculum. It's all the extra things they do that they have to organize, that kids are given the opportunity to stand up and speak. And now they're into, you know, growing plants and just different things like that, and environmental activities, which I think help to nurture children as well.
Like you said, exposing them to issues beyond what they read about in textbooks.
Exactly.
I'm going to quickly address this question on WhatsApp from Sarah. It's not directly related to children and ambitions, but she's asking about her niece who was diagnosed with autism, who's now 6 years old. She's still unable to speak and care for herself. Any general advice would you give for us to cope with this? And are there any supplements which may help? I guess that's a common question.
It is. Yeah. And if there was a quick fix, that would be great, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
And, you know,
unfortunately,
supplements don't teach you skills. If a child is not eating well and they have iron deficiency, yes, we supplement them with iron, but that iron is not going to teach them how to talk, or, you know, it's still about that. I think if she's six and she's unable to speak, you seriously need to look at alternative ways of communication. And, you know, we know that children with autism do really well with visuals, whether it's a picture exchange system or whether it's using an app. And I think you may need to be guided by a speech therapist. And sometimes I tell parents, you know, not that we're saying your child will never speak, mm-hmm. but we now need to get your child communicating first. And in terms of self-help skills, it's about breaking it down into steps. If your child can't feed themselves, you know, hold their hand, hold the spoon, guide it into their mouth, let them be messy, help them, you know, to wipe the table after they've made that mess, mm-hmm. and it, you know, using the hand-over-hand technique. And while it may take a typically developing child a year to learn some skills, it may take your child much longer. But just be patient and be consistent. And one, you know, you can train daily living skills if you do it every day, each time there's an opportunity, and that child may pick that up.
Mm. Do you have a final message, Dr. Rajini, about work and careers in for children?
I think we've got to not dictate what our children want to do, but in terms of preparing them, think about not just, academic skills or IQ type activities, but think about the softer skills. Think about giving them different opportunities and guide them and not dictate to them what they should be doing for the rest of their lives.
Okay, thank you very much, Dr. Rajini. That was consultant developmental pediatrician Dr. Rajini Sarvanandan talking about what children can do when they grow up. You've been listening to Health and Living on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.